I'll be talking about work that came out in September. Right. So let me start very generally. So we have supersymmetry, which we all know is a pretty good candidate for the solution to the hierarchy problem of the electron weak theory. And it also seems to arise all over the place in string theory. So for me, at least, this makes it interesting to study its breaking in a variety of contexts. And if it's a new mechanism, I mean, sort of with the focus on maybe mechanisms, different kinds of mechanisms, and different regimes of field theory. Okay, so on the other hand, we have gauge gravity duality, which is the statement that certain strongly coupled field theories, gauge theories, are well approximated by gravity theories, by classical gravity theories, and that many of their properties can be computed simply by solving ODEs and certain geometries. The field theory is dual to some kind of warped throat geometry. So there's this R3, comma 1, which is what the field theory lives on. And then there's this sort of emergent piece, which is parameterized by this holographic radial coordinate, which turns out to be related to the RG parameter of the field theory through this relation, where L string is the string length, full string length. So this will be a very important relation in this talk. So this is low energies. If R min is bigger than zero, that means the theory has a mass gap. The throat ends prematurely. The scale at which it ends is non-zero. And then this is the UV of the theory. So I want to talk about gravity duals of field theories which break supersymmetry. And I will actually, contrary to what people usually do when they talk about the gauge gravity correspondence, I will talk about things mostly from the field theory side, and most of my derivations will be on the field theory side. But anyways, so what does it mean to break supersymmetry, to have a theory which has a gravity dual and breaks supersymmetry? Well, if the supersymmetry breaking is spontaneous, then by this relation over here, and by considerations in field theory, it means that in the dual geometry, the Suzy breaking will fall off as some power law as I go to large R, right? So this is a statement that the supersymmetry breaking is captured by soft terms, which are relevant as you float to the infrared, but irrelevant as you float to the UV, right? They get less and less important towards the UV, and they have some power law fall off. So let's say dimension 3 operators. So those are 1 over R effects in the geometry. So therefore, we can say that the gravity dual of a field theory which breaks supersymmetry, which has a vacuum which breaks supersymmetry, maybe metastable or otherwise, is dual to a otherwise supersymmetric warped throat, but with supersymmetry breaking localized around this tip region, around the infrared, because the breaking is an infrared phenomenon. So I'm going to consider such objects and argue for the existence of certain of such objects. So what are they good for? Where do they arise? So warp model building is one area. Yeah.
Yes, so which is some localized radius in the geometry.
Yeah.
Is the geometry still reliable in terms of, is it a smooth geometry?
Well, it can or it can't be. In the examples that I'll discuss, it won't be. And that's why I'll be able to use field theory to say something. It will not be, yeah. But there's basically two, the one class of examples where it isn't, is what I'll discuss. And then there's this other class of examples where it is, and those are the, as far as I know, understand.
Geometry is smooth or not?
I'll get to that. Yeah.
Okay.
So where do such objects arise? Well, warp model building is one place. And at the phenomenological level, which means you don't have a, let's see, microscopic string theory construction, but you just have some, you know, 5D effective theory of gravity, you know, where you have some IR brain, and you have some UV brain, and this is the fifth dimension, some radial coordinate, which is the same radial coordinate as before. And then maybe you have some Suzy breaking here on this IR brain, okay, and then maybe you have the standard model propagating in the bulk, okay, maybe you have the Higgs up here, and you put the various generations at various points to do flavor physics. This is sort of one setup. But, you know, when you do this, in reality, that what there should be some strongly coupled gauge theory, which generates this background for you, and which should exist and allow you to put all these fields in these various ways. So when I'm doing 5D Fino, I'm just sort of picking where I want things, and this should all translate to the existence of quantum field theory with particular anomalous dimensions and particular properties. You're doing things microscopically, however, you can maybe identify what that field theory is and make sure that it exists. But anyway, so that Tony Gargetta is someone who likes these kinds of models, and it inspired our work here with a whole bunch of collaborators, Benigni, Domrosky, Franco, Catru, and Galinde, to build such a model in string theory, where we had some throat, and we had some seven brain, on which we had an SU5 gut, and stuff like that. Another area is stringy inflation. You have some throat with some Suzy breaking at the end, and there's some D3 brain which is rolling down, and its position generates acts as the inflaton, and okay, that's all neat. But the backbone is some throat with Suzy breaking at the end, in which you then place additional objects and play with them. So a second related reason is that if I have a throat, it's in general a non-compact object, and that's the case in which it's actually dual to quantum field theory. But I can imagine cutting it off with some radius, R equals UV. So instead of extending it like that, I cut it off and compactify it into string compactification with various fluxes, brains, and topology. Stabilize the various moduli and so on, but otherwise keeping the interior of the throat basically unaffected. And so for each new metastable throat, for each throat that breaks supersymmetry that you can construct and study, you're also indirectly studying a whole class of string vacua, which are based on compactifying these throats. This is good because the throat often you can study analytically, whereas the flux compactification is some god-awful mess, which it's really hard to write down explicitly any solutions for. So you can hope to have control over certain properties of the compactification, over the properties of the compactification, which are determined by the throat. So again, going back to these model building scenarios or inflation, one of the reasons why people study inflation in throats is because you can hope to actually compute something and parameterize the corrections and so on without worrying about the full details of the compactification. So the statement here, I just have a comment, which is kind of interesting, I find. The statement that the same throat can be compactified in a variety number of ways in the context of gauge gravity duality is a statement that a given quantum field theory, which is dual to the throat, can be wedded to quantum gravity in a larger number of ways, because when you introduce this gluing, you make the graviton which propagates here dynamical. So you introduce quantum gravity into the field theory. So now you have a field theory coupled to quantum gravity or gravity and the various whatever moduli and so on. So you know there's some kind of relation to universality here, and the statement that this stuff is not that coupled with this stuff. Is the statement that I can arrange this wedding of the field theory to quantum gravity and only have the result of the marriage introduce irrelevant or maybe marginal operators here which, as you go down in here, don't have a very big effect on the physics in here. All right, so these are sort of heuristic statements, and it's difficult to prove things exactly, but this is sort of the general idea or hope. There's one rather large class of examples, which are strong candidates to realize field theories, which are dual to which have dual gravity descriptions and have Susy breaking, and that's basically you take some supersymmetric throat and you put some anti D3 brains or anti brains at the bottom. That breaks Susy. The gravity, going back to your question, in this case, basically the gravity description is good everywhere except right on top of the anti D3 brains when you get really close to them. And so.
This is no black hole horizon, okay, something. I don't think so. These are just viewed in the probe approximation, a small number of them. So basically, in this situation, the radius at which the D3 sit is basically the radius at which the gravity description kind of breaks down, because things at the D3s become highly curved.
And it's also the same as where the Susy breaking happens, because the Susy breaking happens right where they're sitting. So.
ABS?
It's not really ABS. There's some log corrections to the warp factor.
What's the form of the metric or something?
Something like, well, the warp factor is something like, there's an effective ADS scale. Okay, where the effective ADS scale is basically has some logarithm.
But that thing runs.
That thing runs, yeah. So there's the theory is approximately conformal, but there's some log running in the dual field theory. But it's related to these Clebanov cascades. Stuff like that. Yeah. Okay, but currently these constructions are purely gravitational, and so that's why I say there's strong candidates. The evidence that this configuration is actually a supersymmetry breaking state in a supersymmetric field theory, I think it's quite strong from the gravity point of view. You can actually compute some decay channel, which causes these brains to disappear and be replaced by a supersymmetric configuration. And that decay rate appears to be finite. But there's no independent field theory analysis. There are no independent arguments from the field theory side that such a state exists. But then again, there doesn't seem to have to be a reason for such an argument to exist, because again, it's a strong coupling and you're dealing with non-supersymmetric quantities. You see these scales are the same. So I won't say too much more. So understanding this from field theory or trying to, it's kind of a interesting goal in which, if you succeeded, I think you would learn a lot about field theory. But I won't say too much about that talk. Instead, I'm going to construct a scenario where you can prove things in field theory. But there is still a geometry, and I'll explain how that can be possible. So this could just be interesting because if you can construct new examples, they might have some different, slightly different phenomenological features. I find it theoretically interesting just as a field theory problem. But why should it work? So why should field theory be able to? Especially since we're talking about non-supersymmetric things, why should field theory be able to be effective in this regime? So in order for this to work, we need the following basic setup. I don't see any way around that. If we're going to apply standard techniques of, the power of supersymmetry and, what we know about non-supersymmetric, non-perturbative things in supersymmetric gauge theories, holomorphy and all that, if we're going to use that toolbox, then we need, I think, this kind of a setup. So the throat will have this kind of, will be partitioned in this way into two regions, A and B. In B, supergravity, the geometry will be weakly curved. Supergravity will be a good description. But then as we float down, the curvature becomes order one. It decreases. It becomes less and less weakly curved until the curvature is the order of the string scale here. And then in this region A, the curvature needs to become actually much larger than the string scale so that there's a perturbative quantum field theory description.
Larger than the
screw. Yes. Sort of jump. Yeah, I mean, from the gravity point of view, you lose control at some point, so you don't really know what happens to the curvature. It's not a well-defined concept. But in terms of field theory language, from this scale to this scale, the RG trajectory is well approximated by gravity, and then the field theory becomes weakly coupled below some scale. And we can just use regular quantum field theory. And then in that regular quantum field theory, we can look for a metastable vacuum, and compute some one-loop effective potential and show that in the Susy-breaking vacuum, all the scalar fields are stabilized, that has a long lifetime, and so on.
Is this similar to the ISS construction?
In the deep infrared, we'll get the ISS model and cousins of it. So, okay, fine, yeah, maybe this could happen. Maybe there are field theories that do this, maybe not. But let me just give you a sense of why this might happen in some field theories. So we know that in ADS CFT, in the field theory, we have some Mitov coupling, right? And it's related to, let me see if I can get this right. It's related to L ADS over L string. There's a one quarter here. Like this. And the Mitov coupling itself, some G angles, some G string, and some number of colors. Okay. So we have this relation, right? So usually in the ordinary ADS CFT, lambda doesn't flow, doesn't change at all. The number of colors, the effective number of colors stay fixed as a function of the RG scale. There's n equals 4 superangles. Nothing crazy going on there. But supposing we had a model which in the UV, n was really, really large, so that GSN is much bigger than 1, so that things are weakly curved. But then there's some process through RG flow which decreases n. So you have some n effective. And n in the IR, n effective in the infrared, is, let's say, order 1, so that in this case, GSN IR is less than 1. Okay. So if we had some process which could gradually reduce the n so that there's an n effective, and UV, then we could quite naturally and gradually transition from a region which is weakly curved because the Mitov coupling is large to a region which is highly curved and where the quantum field theory has some perturbative aspects to it.
Lambda is small, not G square. Lambda is small. Strongly coupled here.
In
the sense of G square angles being large and.
Yes, it could, yeah. But here, the fifth coupling will be small. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Okay,
so at this point, I hope that the picture is clear because now we're going to jump into the implementation of it and it this will be like a lot, much more details and so on. So I might lose a fraction of you. So the basic setup is all you need to know, basically why this can work. I'm doing something in field theory, and there's this idea that the way to transition from this region to that region is just to reduce the effective rank of the theory by some process. Okay. So how do we proceed at the technical level? So it turns out that a large class of SUSY breaking configurations within string theory, some kind of brain constructions, that will be very convenient for our purposes, have been found by these authors. And basically what the idea is you have some, you know, this is locally flat space, okay, and then you have some orbifold singularity, maybe a Z2 singularity, which lives on a curve. It goes into space. Then at some, so what happens is, you know, these kinds of orbifold singularity, like, so if we just put type 2B string theory on this space, locally here, there would be maximally supersymmetric because it's just empty flat space, so there would be, what, 32 superchargers or something. Then this singularity here will actually break the local, it won't preserve all the supersymmetries, it'll break it down to a 4D n equals 2 supersymmetry. That's too supersymmetric for us if we're going to talk about SUSY breaking. But then at some point, there's an enhancement. So the singularity gets worse at this point. And the amount of supersymmetry that it preserves, you know, when I put brains in there and in all the right ways, is just a four-dimensional n equals 1 supersymmetry. This is one that may be related to, which was one which has will have a hope for having a metastable vacuum. So anyways, these authors show that if you do things right here and whatnot, you can get a theory that breaks supersymmetry, and it's basically an ISS model, which is some kind of model, Trilliger's, Fibergen-Shi, super QCD. I'll briefly describe that. So here's an example of field theory constructed in this manner, you know, putting brains here, putting fractional brains here. Yeah, okay, so these theories tend to be complicated, have lots of more than one gauge group. This example actually turns out to be the simplest. It's the one that I studied. Has three, okay. And it has some bifundamental matter, okay. These X's are charged under both of these gauge groups. Has some complicated superpotential. It's a quartic term. There are these cubic terms. Okay. And then there's the adjoint. The adjoint will actually play a kind of an important role. You don't need to know you don't need to focus on the details too much. But the adjoint, let me just say, is the adjoint actually, why do you have the adjoint? It's actually due to small fluctuations along this curve here. So there's an adjoint field which takes into account the collective motion of various B brains along this curve here. And how do you get supersymmetry breaking out of this thing? You can see some parameter which has some geometric interpretation, but let's just think in terms of field theory. So you can see now, like, look at the F term of the phi field. Let's impose the F term, try to impose the F term constraint. Well, we'll have an equation like this. And if we choose the ranks correctly, if the rank of the adjoint is larger than the ranks, you know, the ranks that I can get by taking these products, this is the identity matrix, then there's no way for this to completely cancel this because it just doesn't have enough rank. And so you break supersymmetry at the classical level. So just a classical equation. Now, if you expand around the vacuum, which minimizes the classical energy, you'll find a whole bunch of massless scalar fields at the classical level, which aren't Goldstones. So you worry that at one loop, after supersymmetry breaking, these things might get a negative potential and just run off and all hell will break loose. But in Trilliger's, Fibergen-Shi, in a very similar model, actually, just the particular choice of ranks here, or lots of ranks, they show that there's a one-loop effective potential which stabilizes these things, and there aren't any runaways. And that, you know, this is all at weak coupling. If the theory, because the theory is weak coupled, then there's some, there's basically some bare, it's actually a metastable vacuum, and the lifetime is very long. It's, you know, can be made longer than the age of the universe. Wanted to. Okay, but for our purposes, these are just, these are weakly coupled field theories. These ranks are small and rather arbitrary, you know. So they're not going to have dual geometries. They're not going to give us this picture of a, you know, this picture of a warped throat. Warped throat regions A and B. Basically, these field theories can only hope to give us like a region A. We have to UV complete them in some way. Show that there's UV completion, which can give us a region B.
Sorry. How are you computing the lifetime of these things? You said they could be very long lived.
Oh, well, there's just some effective potential, right? And there's some barrier, and then there turns out that there's a quantum effect which induces a supersymmetric vacuum somewhere else. And you can get, you know what the width is and you know what the height is, and so.
So just on WKB.
Yeah, it's a WKB. Yeah. Sure.
And you're assuming both these guys live in a flat space. Everything, there's no gravity in this story so far, right?
Gravity in which sense? Gravity in that sense, or gravity in the sense of a field theory coupled gravity?
Well, if one of them is living at a higher vacuum energy than the other, then we suspect there's some sort of cosmology.
Oh yeah, no, we're not doing gravity yet. Yeah, no.
Okay.
We're not doing gravity in that sense. There's gravity in the sense of the dual field theory coupled to gravity. So there's the field theory, which is dual to gravitational theory.
Yeah.
But the field theory itself is not coupled to gravity.
Even though there's a difference in vacuum energy.
Right, so M Planck descent to infinity, if you will, for the time being. Later, when we discuss custom potential applications, we'll put it back in. But the first step is to consider M Planck infinity and then discuss finite M Planck. And that's where the applications to string computation. Okay, so all of these models are dual to weakly curved geometries themselves, as weakly curved geometries themselves. They can provide target models, that's what I said, due to some cascade. So a cascade is some process which reduces the effective rank as the RG scale goes to the infrared. And so so some cascade could give this behavior. So if I can UV complete this into a cascade, then I'm going to play victory. So
let me see. So we'll study within an hour time. I can't give too many details, but basically what we'll study is this theory, basically the same matter content table, but the large rank version. So the Suzy breaking, which is weakly coupled, happens when these ranks are small. What we do is we start with a UV theory, which has some large N in it. Okay, the same N over, it's the N effective UV over there, if you will, which is very large. And in that regime, the theory is known to actually be dual to a geometry. But the question now is, now we want to actually, now we're starting with the UV theory, and we want to go down, integrate down, and actually derive the IR theory. I mean, how do we know that it actually emerges? Okay, they seem to be similar, right? Same matter content table, but just different ranks, but it's not obvious that when you go down in energies, you'll actually get that model, or that you'll get it in the right region of parameters where things work nicely, and so on. So there's some analysis that one needs to do. Now, because region B is approximately supersymmetric, we don't need to worry about the fact that in the end of the day we're going to put some Suzy breaking here. We can, in terms of just tracking the RG flow and getting a deriving. So what we want to do is we want to integrate all these modes, derive the effective field theory at this scale, where it's weakly coupled, and then check that there's a Suzy breaking backing. In order to do that, it's actually the power of supersymmetry is enough inside the field on the field theory side. So I can use it to track qualitatively track the RG flow just in field theory, and things will happen here, and then you know I get here and I compute things. And using things from the using this information from the field theory, we can actually construct some of the some interesting features which arise in this geometry. There's certain events that happen at certain scales, which leave a signature. Now, of course, if you wanted to compute things in detail, like you know what actually the more detailed properties of the RG flow, which aren't you know holomorphic or related to Suzy, in some way, you would have to do some kind of gravity computation. So gravity has a lot more information in this region. But field theory, I claim, is enough to follow the RG flow and derive the effect of field theory down here.
Can I bring construction to this theory?
Yes, right. Yeah, so this is a quiver gauge theory, and it has some description in terms of rings.
But what I'm worried about, usually when you change the rank,
you
can have tadpoles. So, I mean, what's the rank?
No, there aren't any. Tadpoles would arise as anomalies in the field theory.
Not necessarily. You can have tadpoles and not anomalies.
I mean, if the field theory is consistent.
You can have a theory?
Yeah.
That is anomaly free, but the brain construction that you use to derive it is Ramon tadpoles. Just take n equals 1 super young mills. It's anomaly free, right?
Yeah.
But you can construct it by putting brains at small singularity, so n fractional brains, and they could have an inconsistency because you have a Ramon tadpole.
Well, maybe because there's extra stuff in that construction, but I mean, if the field theory is. If the field theory is consistent, it derives the string. It defines the string theory.
Yes.
So I don't see how there could
that's sufficient. You could probe the inconsistency by putting some other probe, and then you would see the inconsistency. It could be that the brain construction you started with, the field theory is consistent, even though the string theory is not. And the way you would discover that the field theory is inconsistent is now you put something else.
Okay.
And the couple's field theory would be inconsistent.
Let's chat about this after.
Understood correctly, the supersymmetry breaking is taking A at the moment?
Yes.
So from the phenomenological point of view, why do we care that B exists?
Oh, that B exists? Ah, well, that's a good question. Well, when did it work model building? You wouldn't do it in this region A. You would do it in this region B, and then you would feel some Suzy breaking from here. Also, in my other sort of motivation, if you want to compactify these things, it's easier to think of compactifying them in a region B where there's a geometry than sticking region A sort of and gluing it onto geometry directly. Feels a little safer because, but that's also, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, from the point of view of phenomenology, I mean, okay, I don't know. I mean, you can just study supersymmetry breaking in a variety of field theories. But I wanted to have some application for warp model building or string compactification, or some clear application, or as clear as I can imagine.
This game has some clear remnant in deep in A, or? You can say that some A.
Yes, it actually will. Yeah, so there'll be things that happen in B which actually change what you would have thought you're getting in A. I'll explain. The gluing isn't entirely
trivial. What will happen is actually the region B will introduce extra massless fields, and you have to show that they get stabilized.
Yes, there is, but it's smaller and smaller the farther out you go. So it's okay to treat things as effectively supersymmetric, and you know until you get down to some lower scale, at which you then decide, okay, I'm going to put the theory in a supersymmetry breaking vacuum, and go from there.
I mean, once you start gluing, just you cannot decide anything there.
You take the field theory and you kind of integrate it down to get an effective field theory.
Yes.
And then you look for the vacua that are in that theory.
Okay, so you know, I'll consider this theory, which is some Cougar gauge theory that you get from some grain construction and zooming in, taking the near horizon geometry, or taking the subsector of modes that survive in that near horizon limit, you get the field theory. And so there's a kind of a process that happens in these Cougar gauge theories, which is. Okay, so let me actually go here. So how do you study this? Okay, so how do you actually study this? So you have some super. This is the RG flow here, okay, and this is the supergravity regime or so. So this is the regime in which you'll have a field theory. You'll have a region. We expect that there's going to be a region B. And then something will happen here. We'll show that there's region A and Susie breaking. But anyway, so this is this regime. But it turns out you can UV complete it into a fixed point, some conformal field theory, which is strongly coupled. And this conformal field theory is not isolated. It comes in a family of conformal field theories. And there's some, you know, three complex dimensional manifold, UV fixed manifold, along which you can move holomorphically. So you can holomorphically deform the flow. And there's actually a corner where this flow, which is just this kind of straight line, becomes kind of a curvy line. And what that means is that the flow starts here, and then there's this family, these ABCD are some family of other fixed points, where they have less and less rank, actually. Okay? And you can show that the flow can be arranged to pass arbitrarily closely to each one of them. And as you go down, the effective rank reduces. And in this picture, basically, the flow that you follow is So anyways, we're gonna use this regime to kind of understand, glean what information we can about this regime. So basically, what we're worried about is that some things might happen in this regime which might modify expectations for what the naive effect of field theory is down here. So what you can do, so these fixed points, these A, B, and C, you can find them by taking the NSVZ, NSVZ beta function, which is some expression in terms of, you know, the ranks of gauge groups and some anomalous dimensions of your fundamental fields. Okay, and you can search for these fixed points and you can find a family of them. And then what you do is you track the flow of two couplings, lambda. There are basically two couplings which are running in this theory. And they're related to, eta is basically, I didn't draw it here, but eta is the, I did actually. Eta is the quartic coupling. And there's another coupling associated to the a gauge group with an adjoint. And these are the two sort of important ones that we're keeping track of, the ones that are flowing. And then around each one of these fixed points, you can compute the beta functions for eta and lambda. And it turns out when one is irrelevant, the other one is relevant. So there's always, you get close, but then one of them drives you away. You get close to this one, then one of them drives you away, and so on. And so, okay. So let me just go back now. Let me just go here. Anyways, I'll get back to that actually. So, anyways, you start with this large rank. You start with this large rank version, and then these theories actually they undergo a sequence of dualities, where basically the number of rank the effective rank gets reduced. There are some simpler models where this is known to occur, and these models aren't too different, so that's the expectation there. But basically, the way you see it is by this kind of analysis that I attempted to describe over there. So let me just describe how this works in practice. So you track the gauge couplings of these various gauge groups, okay, and oftentimes, some of them will be IR-free, and one of them is asymptotically free. And when the one that hits strong coupling, something should happen. It's basically running towards what seems like infinity. And in order to continue the RG flow past this sort of singularity, you need to do something. And it turns out that if the gauge coupling, which is which does not have an adjoint associated with it. So let's say it's this one. Okay, there's no adjoint there that's charged into this gauge group. Then you can perform a cyber duality, which is like an electromagnetic duality, which smoothens out the flow and undoes the sign of this beta function for this coupling, which is foreign for strong coupling, and smoothly continues the physics down to lower energies. But what it does is it reduces the effective rank. So the theory comes back to the same form, basically that you have the same superpotential as before, but you have a rearrangement of the fields, and you have a smaller effective rank and slightly different ranks. So here n double prime prime is n minus m2, so it decreased by some amount. But the theory is basically identical to what it was before. So here's what it was before. And then the adjoint jumped here. So it went from here to here. There's a new adjoint that gets introduced. The old one gets a mass and gets integrated out. And then these fields sort of shuffle around. Okay. So we're moving down. We're moving down in this effective rank. We've decreased it a little bit, and we want to keep going. Okay. Now, if we just repeated this step a bunch of times, if that's all what was happening, then things would be rather easy. Life would be rather easy, because the theory is basically coming back to it's the same form, and the coupling is decreasing. So by the time that I get to this region, the theory will be just be a smaller rank version of this theory, and the smaller rank version of this theory is known to have a Suzy breaking backing. So life would be good. We wouldn't have to think much. We could just say, well, this is all that happens. When we go down, we get what we want. We get the smaller version theory, no strings attached. But life isn't so easy, because in applying this duality, I said there has to be no adjoint at the node that hits strong coupling. So what happens when the adjoint, the node with the adjoint, the couple, the TIF coupling associated to the node with the adjoint hits strong coupling? In such a case, this duality wouldn't apply. There's no cookbook recipe for how to proceed. Okay, we can't apply some cyber duality or even Kutasov duality, if you're familiar with that. And it turns out that you would have thought that maybe you can avoid such a situation, because what happened, you see the adjoint, it sort of jumped. So you could imagine that maybe every time I have to do a cyber duality, I can just do it on some node without the adjoint and have the adjoint sort of just jump around so as to avoid ever being problematic. But that turns out doesn't seem to be the case. Every order one sort of RG steps, there is a problem. The node with the adjoint, the TIF coupling associated with this node seems to run off to infinity. So it's essential to understand what happens at these sort of adjoint singularities when this happens. Because we have to derive the low energy theory, and to derive the low energy theory, we have to start at high energies and flow it down. You know, you can't just skip some integrations. You know, skip the middle. So anyway, so this is what I was sort of saying sort of before. You continue the theory to this regime where you can follow things and you can do this sort of nice field theory analysis, and sort of. If something dramatic happens when this adjoint coupling goes to infinity, it will show up in this analysis, and when we continue it back, we can have an idea of what the correct procedure is to continue the flow and what the correct effective field theory is. So, anyways, the kind of result, which I don't have time to really explain in too much detail. Is that the strongly coupled adjoint node should be basically approximated by an n equals 2 theory on its Coulomb branch. Naively, you know, you could have, this is, you know, this is sort of the first thing that you would actually think of, but then you would need to prove it, which is more difficult. But the reason why you would think of it is because if you remember, n equals 2 gauge theories, they always have an adjoint field, an adjoint scalar multiplet in n equals 1 language. And they have this kind of coupling, okay? They have this cubic coupling, and this is exactly what we have here, you know, except for this term here. But this piece looks like it's an n equals 2 supersymmetric sort of almost subsector. It's not really true because all these fields are heavily mixing, and there's some anomalous dimensions which are large, so that's what makes it non-trivial. But naively, it looks like there's some kind of n equals 2-ness going on. And furthermore, if we go back, actually, there's a geometric sort of intuition, too. I remember at the beginning I said there was this curve of orbifold singularities, which was actually also had a local n equals 2 in it. The n equals 2 is broken to n equals 1 here. So, again, there's some n equals 2-ishness floating around. It's just a Z2. Well, in this example, it's an A1, locally A1. Well, I have three nodes, but it's not from the Z. It's not just the Z3 singularity. No. That would be a chiral one. This is a non-chiral. Okay. Okay. So this leads to a prescription for this kind of really class of theories. And I studied one here. I'm talking about one example, but really, there are generalizations where you have different kinds of things here and different singularities here, and they all have the same problem of these adjoint singularities. And so we come up with a prescription which seems reasonable for treating the RG flow for all of these theories when that happens, which is that you approximate it by n equals 2 CD. So let me just mention what happens in n equals 2 super QCD. So in asymptotically free n equals 2 super QCD, there is a gauge coupling which runs to what seemingly like infinity if you just compute the one loop beta function. So there's some kind of strong coupling singularity again going on. But the low energy behavior can always be understood by some spontaneous breakdown of the gauge group, which leads either to a conformal phase or some infrared-free phase. So effectively what happens, the theory wants to go to strong coupling, but then there are some instanton corrections which just force a breaking upon you. And that's what smoothens out things. And moreover, these theories, this is one of the simplest examples, n equals 2, SU3 super Yang Mills. So U here is the gauge invariant operator made out of the adjoint field. And so it parameterizes the Coulomb branch. And you know, at large U, the theory is heavily Higgs, and basically it's weakly coupled. And so there's a U1, massless U1 everywhere around here. And as you continue to the interior, the low energy theory continues to be described by just the U1 theory, just the free photon, except at certain special points, U equals minus 1 and U equals 1, we also get some massless, new massless degrees of freedom, like a monopole or a dion. Yeah?
Two node, the microcoupled to it, can it be more than 2m? I mean, can it be?
Then it becomes IR free.
Yes, so yeah. Can that happen here?
I'm specifically considering when that's not the case. But
because you've got a parallel, yeah. But it is jumping right on the nodes. So at some point, it could be that the other of the other two is more than the one where the chiral multiplied to that.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay, so in the generalization to, you know, super PCB with arbitrary NC and NF, there's some similar U field happening. The generalization, there's a whole vector, trace phi squared, trace phi cubed, which are all independent, and there's a higher dimensional Coulomb branch. And as before, there are, you know, calculable points, you know, where there's sort of points where various numbers of monopoles and dions and so on go massless. This is all captured by this Seiberg-Witten curve. It's an exact solution. You can compute things exactly and so on. Part of this. In this example that we want to study, which is an n equals one example, there is also something like a Seiberg-Witten curve. And morally speaking, what happens is you can analyze what the corrections are due to the n equals 1 sort of parts of it, and you can show that it basically leaves things unchanged. And so what happens at these adjoint singularities is there's some effective Higgsing that's induced. There are some moduli, and you know, if you want to tune the moduli, you can even find some monopole points. And they can be remain massless. So basically, the geometric picture that arises is this one. In region B, you have the RG flow, and you have maybe some, you know, nothing really happens. And then you have these locations where the adjoint coupling runs off, it hits a singularity, but it's resolved by the introduction of new objects into the geometry. So after the Higgsing, what you get is you get a bunch of U1 factors that are left over. If UN is the gauge group under which the adjoint is charged, it tends to break to something like UN minus some M across a bunch of U1 to the M, 2M or some U1 to M. Plus a whole bunch of scalars, because these are n equals two vectors, plus possibly some monopoles. So they happen at the scales where these singularities happen. And so in the geometry, what happens is you get localized sources, which are actually some kind of fractional D3 brains, living at these points. And their positions roughly correspond to these extra scalar fields that you get from the field theory side. And then if you tune them correctly, you can get also some kinds of massless monopoles, which should be some sort of maybe fractional D1 stretching between them, which should become tensionless for the right choices of parameters. M in terms of the other, M is some combination of, these M2s and M1s.
In the modulus space of this n equal to 2 theorem, the gauge symmetry is basically breaking to that? Is that the state?
Yeah. So actually, what happens is there's a sort of a minimum amount of breaking, which is captured by these m's. And if you want to break it even more, you can do so. But the point is there's a minimum amount of breaking which has to happen, and a minimum number of scalars which have to be produced, NASTA scalars which have to be produced. Evan, it's okay. Yeah, I'm almost done. So I had this picture. It was So region B, things aren't as trivial here. You know, you don't just have a nice reduction of the effective rank and the theory basically keeping the identical form and then getting the theory that you want in the IR, it seems. But there are these special points where things happen, and you get these extra massless fields. So basically, the theory that you get here is basically the model that you wanted plus a whole bunch of massless scalars and possibly monopoles. And that can be a little bit worrisome because when the supersymmetry breaking happens, these things are basically massless and can get pushed out of the throat. So there can be instabilities that occur. Okay, so basically one has to be sure that that doesn't happen. There's some mechanism for these things to actually get stabilized. So anyway, after sort of a long period of RG flow, we have these cyber dualities and adjoint transitions. The low energy effective field theory that you can get, this is an example of it, we'll again have our low rank model, which has supersymmetry breaking if the ranks are chosen, if the rank of this guy is much bigger than what you can get from this. Classically, but then you have a whole bunch of moduli, psi k, which again are dual to these scalars that get produced, or which are these scalars that get produced, and are dual to these, have some geometric interpretation in terms of these brains and this geometry. And again, like I said, they can potentially lead to problems because they can get destabilized and run away. And then you don't get a supersymmetry breaking vacuum. But luckily, if you're careful and you use this n equals 2 technology and you go to a special point in this moduli space, special values of these fields, in this case, I've put them at the origin, you get these extra massless monopoles, which you should include into your effective field theory. And if you do include them, then the F-term constraint of the moduli causes these monopoles to condense, okay, and then their condensation basically gaps the entire sector. So, when these things get a VEV of order Xi, which is the same Xi that leads to the Suzy breaking, it's the same parameter. When these things get a VEV and you do an expansion around their VEV, these moduli get a mass as well. And so it's these monopoles that sort of save the day and stabilize these extra fields that get produced. Whereas the non-abelian sector, sort of this sector, is stabilized by the usual calculation that I mentioned in the beginning, the ISS model. So if you had forgotten about these monopoles, or been kind of unsure about their existence, because it is an n equals 1 theory, so you have to be a little careful in making sure that they're there and massless. There are all kinds of non-perturbative corrections that can enter and change the RG flow and do weird things. But if you forgot about them, then you would just have this term, okay? And then that would be a little problematic because then you wouldn't be able to say whether these things lead to runaways or not, because basically this sector and this sector, they're not coupled by any relevant interactions. They're just irrelevantly coupled, and so it would lead to moduli which are incalculable. So again, this is the geometric picture. So again, you know, the moduli live here, And the fact that the sector of the moduli and the, is decoupled from the kind of the low energy SUSY breaking sector is exhibited geometrically because there's a separation between these things. So they have some very they would have some very small wave function overlap. Okay, so conclusions. So we discussed some applications of warp throats very briefly as a motivation. We gave field theory arguments for such throats. We have field theory construction of a class of examples. Further directions, well, let's, you know, there are kind of some neat applications. Interesting hidden dark sector. So something that happens in these things is that after the SUSY breaking, there's actually usually some leftover n equals 1 super Young Mill sector, which then goes down to confine at much lower energies. You know, it can be very low energies. And so you could imagine, and there's actually even another sector which typically happens, which is there's another asymptotically free gauge theory coupled to a bunch of fermions. And that will also go to confine. So there will be, if you did a string compactification of this model with the SUSY breaking, you would have, in addition to the SUSY breaking, some really light, some potentially really light modes, blue balls and stuff like that. So, it could be interesting to see whether, it's sort of neat. Okay, thank you very much.
Have you thought at all about the finite temperature version of all this stuff?
No. You mean maybe like early universe stuff, or just
what happens at finite?
Just what happens at finite temperature?
I mean, again, going back to sort of my cosmology. Usually, one would also like to know these things.
I see. Yeah. So, the KKLT story where you have. So KKLT story is basically built on a warp throat where SUSY breaking localized at the tip. So I think you could probably take their construction, just swap the throats, and then have stringy de Sitter vacuum. There are all kinds of subtleties that arise in the compactification process, but should work. That's one link to his de Sitter.
No further questions.
Okay, thank you.